Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Pierced Hearts by Aaron Sanders. Narrated by Amelie Griffin and Mason Lloyd. Prologue. Darby. I turn off the engine, taking a moment to admire the landscape of my parents' property. Everything looks the same, but I couldn't feel more different. It's been a long time since I lived my life without a plan. Out of the corner of my eye, I spot Linda rolling Mom onto the terrace. Runner, my golden retriever, crawls halfway across the console, excited to finally be here. "What do you think, boy? Ready for some changes?" He barks his reply. We jump out, and he races to the fields, checking out his new surroundings. My heart leaps when my mom stands, taking four steps away from her wheelchair, and extends her arms to me. "Mama, get your skinny butt up here," she haughtily calls back. I cross the distance and almost collapse into her arms. It's been 7 long weeks since her surgery. Seeing her stand and take those steps sends relief flooding through me. Of course, Dad, Linda, my brother, Mom's physical therapist, and her doctor had all sent videos, but witnessing it in person makes it all the more real. She's fine. "Looking good, old woman. Glad you fixed yourself. I was dreading coming back here to a lazy slug." "Lazy my ass. I'll show you lazy when we're up at 5:30 in the morning." "Oh, are we sleeping in tomorrow?" I tease, reaching out a hand to Linda, who takes it affectionately. "Smart ass." Mom's arms tighten before she steps back, cupping my chin with her fingertips. "My Darby Rose is home." The words are simple, but the meaning is clear. "I'm home." There's a short twinkle in her eye before she looks me over, her hand falling to my waist and pinching my side. "You're even skinnier. I may have been drugged up the last time you were home, but I remember you. Now you're skin and bones." "Here we go. Let the ridiculing begin." "I'm not skin and bones. I needed to lose some weight. It's called getting fit." "Look at these fancy clothes, Linda. And that hair. Darby's always had such gorgeous, thick hair. I understand why she wears it up for work, but for a casual afternoon at home?"
"I think she looks lovely, Annie. Leave her alone."
I flash Linda an appreciative smile, squeezing her hand once more before releasing it. Linda has been my mom's best friend forever. I can't remember a time in my life when Linda wasn't around. She and her husband, Ray, live close, and she has been a lifesaver to our family since Mom's fall. Without her, we'd be lost. 8 weeks ago, Mom was riding her horse and had a horrible fall. Linda was the first one to get to her since my brother was out of town. It took a day for doctors to give us all the answers. Mom had shattered her hip, fractured her pelvis, slipped a disc in her lower spine, and sprained her ankle. Linda was at her side, giving me hourly updates until I could get from Charlotte to Charleston. It was Linda who calmed my hysteria and helped me arrange all that was needed when Mom left the hospital. My brother, Evan, and Dad handled all the medical professionals while I worked on getting Mom's house ready, and her therapy, transportation, and caregivers set up. I barely remember the whirlwind of those few weeks, but Linda was my family's rock. Not to mention, she comes to my rescue when Mom gets on a roll. "You would think she looks lovely. You love these fancy schmancy wide-legged trousers. I prefer something tighter that shows off her figure.
Mom goes on. They're linen, Mom. They're cool, and they are comfortable for driving, I throw back. Speaking of driving, what the hell is that godforsaken monstrosity you drove up in? It's my new SUV. You know I needed something larger for the business, and I thought it would be easier for you to get in and out of than my old car. She studies me for a second, and her eyes instantly fill with sympathy. A quiet understanding passes between us. A quick glance at Linda tells me she's figured out the same thing. It has to be that motherly instinct that kicks in when a child is hiding something. Or hiding from something. It's just a car. Let's not make a big deal. I try again. We'll all go for a ride when your brother gets here. He'll help you unload. The shed is all set up. You're sure you wouldn't prefer me staying in the house with you? That's up to you, honey. You are welcome to your old room, but I figured you'd want some of your own space. I'm getting around well enough, and having you close will be fine. I chew on my bottom lip, thinking about actually moving back in with my mom at 33 years old. Staying under her roof while visiting is a lot different than my current situation. For now, I've uprooted my life, coming home to be close to family while I figure out the next steps. Maybe the shed is best. Whatever you want. Let's get back in the house. Linda and I have been dying to hear all about your new bakery space. Evan has been tight-lipped. Do you need your chair? I start to grab it, and she shakes her head to stop me. Okay. Let me get my purse and phone out of the car. See you inside. She and Linda head to the back door, but not before she gives me another sympathetic glance. I pay close attention to her steps and balance, which seem to be right on track. Then I think about the meaning behind her look. She's on to me. I'm not fooling anyone. It's been 12 years since I've spent any lengthy amount of time with my family in Charleston. I purposely lost all touch with my old life. When I made the decision to come home and help Mom, I knew things had to change. I found a wonderful woman to lease my townhome, took care of my business and clients, packed what I needed, and made arrangements to store the rest. All of that was fairly simple, with the help of my dad, brother, and best friend. Then I went to work on me. It was easy to find a trainer, and with extreme commitment, I successfully lost 20 pounds, redefining my overly voluptuous curves into a leaner figure. The new hair and wardrobe came next. The purchase of the car was a bigger deal. Evan almost hemorrhaged when I told him how much I needed out of my portfolio to pay cash for the Infiniti. He tried to talk me out of it, but quit when I threatened to pull all my money and find a new money manager. The vehicle is nice, but it's not really me. No more free-spirited, wild-haired, relaxed, and easy Darby. That girl disappeared a long time ago. The new me is a sharp-minded business owner that most likely won't be recognized. When I walked away from him, I gave him this part of my life. There was no choice. Charleston was his home, too. And he was making a hell of a lot of roots here that would have destroyed me if I'd stayed. Moving was easy. It was the years of self-torment and heartache that came afterward. I gave Pierce Kendrick my heart, my soul, and my beloved Charleston. And he never even blinked.
Chapter 1. Pierce. 3 weeks later. I lean casually against the brick column, drinking my coffee and watching the cars piling into the parking lot. Children and parents fuss with backpacks, lunch boxes, and what look like presents as they rush into the school. A few wave in recognition, but mostly, everyone looks panicked. A flash of red catches my eyes as my Connie flies into the lot and nearly crashes into a post. I take a deep breath and go to help when she stomps around to the trunk, snapping at Cole and Maya to hurry and help her. They do as they're told, but both abandon their mission when they spot me coming.
Dad!
Cole breaks out into a run, slamming into me. Maya is gentler, but her arms grip me tight. Hey, guys, what's going on?
Can some of you please come help me?
Cole tenses at Connie's shout, and I recognize the irritation and exhaustion in her voice, which always results in her being a total bitch. Come on, kids. Let's help your mom. Connie places two large shopping bags on the ground, never making eye contact. Her bad mood is even more apparent the closer I get. Hey, why don't you two go ahead and get inside? I'll help your mom with all this and meet you in the auditorium. Their faces fill with relief, and they don't even glance her way before taking off. What's the deal? I cross my arms and prepare for the heat.
What's the deal?
She sneers, her eyes coming to mine and flaming with anger.
The deal is Maya is 11 years old and needs a swift slap to get a lesson in manners. Cole didn't want to get up this morning, and I found out he snuck out of bed and played some fucking video game online until midnight. The teachers asked for volunteers to bring refreshments for the assembly, and since we were running so damn late, I had to swing through and get donuts, which means all the snooty-ass moms are going to have a shit fit that I brought unhealthy choices. Not to mention, it's Teacher Appreciation Week, and today is Gift Day.
That explains all the bags. Okay, let's break this down. You slap my daughter, we're going to have a problem. She's getting too old for a spanking, and if we need to punish her, we'll do it together. But you haul off and slap her, you'll answer to me. The anger in her eyes begins to glow, her face twisting in disgust. I continue before she can respond. You needed help with refreshments, you should have fucking called me. I would have picked them up. But, just saying, donuts are fine. Any snooty bitch that has a problem with it can go fuck themselves. As for Cole, I'll have a talk with him. He's losing his gaming system and his technology until the end of school.
You think you have all the answers, don't you? I want to rip out the gaming system forever.
School doesn't end for 3 weeks. That will feel like forever to a 9-year-old.
You're going to tell him. I'm sick of being the mean parent.
I have no problem telling him. I have no problem disciplining our kids. If you'd tell me what's going on before you're ready to have a rip-roaring brawl in the school parking lot. You need something or there's a problem with our kids. You call me.
We don't have time for this right now. It's already embarrassing enough for Maya that she's the only friend in her group with split parents. I'm not going to make it worse by arguing with you in public.
I bite back my reply, because it's a never-ending battle with Connie when it comes to our kids and our situation. She claims it's humiliating and traumatic, blaming me. I've learned to shoulder the blame, but when it comes to my children, I've always put them first. I'll carry these. It's my way of shutting down the conversation. We walk quietly into the school and find the kids grouped by grade in the auditorium. I follow Connie as she delivers the donuts to the refreshment area, which is overloaded with dozens and dozens of donuts. She slices her eyes to me, and I don't hide my amused grin.
Shut up, she scowls.
I'll talk to the kids tonight when I pick them up for the weekend. Cole will be easy. He knows he messed up. Maya, I'll figure it out. I tell her when we find a section against the wall to wait for the program to begin.
Maya is about to start middle school and is prepubescent. She's going to be a royal pain for a while.
I cringe at the reminder my baby girl is close to not being a baby anymore. It's a constant battle, and I know she's much harsher to Connie, but I'm also more relaxed in my parenting style. I put the bags I've been carrying on the floor, barely glancing inside. The assembly starts, and halfway through, an all-too-familiar scent fills the air around me. My head jerks from one side to the other, scanning every face in the room. I tell myself, it's crazy. There's no way it could be, but I'd know that smell anywhere in the whole damn world. It's a tropical breeze. Coconuts, lime, honey, and sea spray. And at the base is the faintest scent of Marc Jacobs perfume, a perfume I bought exactly 6 times in my life. It's the unmistakable scent of Darby Graham. I continue to look around, grunting when Connie elbows me in the ribs with a "What the hell is wrong with you?" glare. The rest of the program drags on like mud, each presentation seemingly longer than the last. When they finally announce the last 5th grade award, my skin is crawling.
Are you sick? Connie has the decency to seem concerned. No. Why? I've seen you this jumpy 4 times in your life, and 2 of the times I was in labor. I don't care enough to ask about the other 2 instances. And thankfully I'm saved when Maya comes at me from the side, crushing me with her excited screeches. Cole joins next, and Connie positions us for pictures. The instant I crouch to the floor between my kids, that scent almost knocks me to my ass. It's everywhere. She's everywhere. Dad, you're looking a little pale. Cole places the back of his hand on my forehead. I'm good, buddy. Why don't we give your teachers their gifts so your dad can get out of this hot auditorium? Connie gently pulls the kids away to give me air. I yank the bags off the ground, ready to get the hell out of here. It's then I spy it, the black card with the iridescent blue scroll. Dots, swirls, and the perfectly slanted initials DG lay in the middle of it all. The emblem, the brand, the unforgettable blue. My throat burns, my head spins, and my gut rolls over so quickly the coffee from earlier threatens to come up. The memory of the first time I saw this design assaults me. Darby's spring break senior year. She was lying on a lounge chair by the pool, and I was ready to pounce to drag her back to our room until we left the next day. She started flipping through a notebook, and the picture caught my eye. I grabbed the notebook, turned back to the page, and raised an eyebrow in question. "It's a sketch. I may need a brand one day," she explained casually. "And the blue? That's not just any blue. It's a specialized blue. The kind of color that took layering and perfecting and is so unique it can't be duplicated." "Why so perfected?" "Because it's the color of your eyes." That was it. I'd known for a while it was going to happen, but that was when I told her. She was going to marry me. I swallow hard, staring at the business card until I have my thoughts remotely under control. "Hey, what did y'all get your teachers this year?" Cole and Maya look at their mom for answers. "I picked up some of these new chocolates my boss has been raving about. They sell them at the shop by the office." I jump to my feet, ripping the card and tearing the delicate ribbons with it. "You need some cash? Are you actually offering? You usually have no problem taking my money." "How much?" I try to sound normal, but the acid in my voice gives me away. She goes back to glaring, and I feel like a dick with my kids as witnesses. I pull a few $100 bills out of my wallet, fold them in half, and step closer to slide the money in her hand. "Do something nice for yourself this weekend while I have the kids, Connie. Thank you for picking up the end-of-the-year gifts." My focus goes back to Maya and Cole. "We'll grill with Uncle Miller tonight." There are murmurs of approval as I say goodbye and ignore Connie's inquisitive scowl. When I get to my truck, my adrenaline is pumping so hard I'm lightheaded. The card still tucked in my hand is like a burning poker on the skin. The fucking smell fills the cab of my truck, and I know she had her hands on those packages. Chocolate was her specialty. That was 12 years ago. I haven't touched a piece of chocolate since. "Where are you?" Miller's shout is amplified throughout my truck. "Going to be late. Why am I not fucking surprised? I thought you were going to leave this alone."
"I never said that."
"You agreed Friday night to let this shit lie."
"No, I drank beer and let you rant on about how this was nothing but a coincidence and trying to find her would be like opening a fatal war wound."
"I didn't get through to you at all."
"Waste of my damn breath." "Miller, this is Darby we're talking about here." Just saying her name sends a pang to my chest.
"Nothing has ever been just Darby to you. That's why I'm concerned. You've never had a clear head when it came to that chick. You used to love that chick. Loved her and then loathed her. That bitch nearly destroyed you. Leave her in the past. You ever go to the depths of hell, you'll understand where I'm coming from. Until then, you need to back the fuck off and let me do what I need to do. If she's in this town, I deserve to know."
"And then what? Chase her down like the 23-year-old pussy-whipped idiot that took the abuse the first time?"
Anger boils in my blood, and I swerve into the small parking lot to stop from turning around and heading back to the office to kick my brother's sorry ass.
"You're a fucking dick." "I may be a dick, but I care about you. Sometimes the truth hurts, and you telling me about this may be the only thing that saves you from spiraling down the black hole we dragged you out of."
That stings.
Everything about this situation slices me up inside. He doesn't need to remind me of the past. I lived through it. I fucked up big time, and not a day goes by I'm not reminded of that. Lucky for me, I have two great kids that help ease the regret from mistakes that should have been avoided. You know what she meant to me, and what we went through, I point out, grinding my teeth to keep from losing my cool. Just text me when you're on your way to a job site. I have some papers that need your signature. The line goes dead. Having my older brother jump my ass is another fucking notch to add to an already shitty Monday. All weekend, my head was swimming with questions about Darby. Focus was impossible. For the first time ever, I asked Connie if I could drop the kids off early last night, lying about an early morning meeting that couldn't be rescheduled. It was another dick move because the kids were already in bad moods. Cole didn't like losing his video games, and Maya didn't like getting a lecture from her dad about respecting her mom. In order to try to cover my ass, we went shopping and I stocked Connie's house with enough groceries to last a month. One look at her when she opened the door proved she didn't believe my excuse, but she didn't push the issue. When I got home, I grabbed the scotch, opened my computer, and spent the next 4 hours glued to the internet. Then I sat staring into space, drinking more than I should have, thinking about what the hell I should do. Every sensible thought told me to let this go. Self-preservation was at the top of the list. But my heart had other plans, and when I woke up this morning, the decision was made. The reminder on my phone dings, and at the same time, an older man appears at the window of the storefront, unlocking the door and propping it open for the few customers waiting outside. I'd hoped to be in the store alone so I could question the owner, but it looks like that's not going to happen. The combination of curious energy and caffeine overload has my nerves jacked up when I walked in. Connie asked me to meet her here once for lunch at the deli tucked in the corner. That's a small portion of the interior. The rest is floor-to-ceiling shelves displaying local merchandise. Anything from handmade glassware to local artwork can be found here. Not my kind of place. It's impossible to miss the large display cooler next to the register. Candies and treats of all kinds line the top, with samples set out in front of them. My heart hammers in my chest, setting my blood rushing faster at the items in the cooler. Small, delicate, beautifully decorated petit fours are stacked thick across an entire shelf. My hands tingle with phantom cramps, thinking about the night Darby insisted I help her make those fucking petit fours for my mom's 50th birthday party. They were a pain in my ass, and I swore I'd never do that again. "Can I help you?" A perky, upbeat voice slices through my thoughts, and I find a woman peering through the display at me. "Just browsing. My kids mentioned your new selection of chocolate. We gave them to their teachers last week."
"We started carrying them 10 days ago. The manager cleared out this whole display after last week's popularity. By Friday morning, we had a line out the door. It was crazy."
"Must be good stuff.
Would you like a sample?"
"Nah, I'm not a huge chocolate person." Her eyes bulge at my statement, and it's a full 2 seconds before she shakes her head in disbelief.
"That's too bad. It's not like regular chocolate. The baker has a specialty truffle that is flying off the shelves. We got a new delivery this morning."
At the mention of truffle, my heart actually stops beating. The words feel like sandpaper on my throat when I force myself to ask, "Does it have a name?"
"Funny you should ask. I figure it's something to do with the dark chocolate. It's Da Rose."
"Da Rose," I repeat. "Darby Rose. The name I chose the night she created it."
"Yes. If you ever change your mind, you should try a sample. We keep them back here."
"I'll remember that. How about a few of these cookies for my kids?" I don't even know what I point to, but she nods and gets to work.
"You can check out at the end of the counter."
She gestures to where the man who opened the door is working a register. "Great choice," he says cheerfully, taking my money. "Can you tell me more about the baker?" The words slip past my lips before I can stop them.
"I've known her family for years.
She's quite the amazing baker, and having her back..." The statement dies when he glances up, recognition dawning in his eyes. He knows who I am. His movements become flustered as he shoves the box in a bag and hands me my change.
"Her website tells you all you need to know."
He gazes over my shoulder to the next customer, effectively dismissing me.
When I get to my truck, I toss the bag in the passenger seat and slam my hand to my steering wheel. Anger builds from the bottom of my soul. I dissected every section and every word on her website at least a dozen times last night. DBCreations.com caters to the business owner interested in carrying the products and the consumer interested in learning more about how to request goods. There are a few snippets of information about Darby's background and training, never mentioning her by name. There is no personal information, and specifically no mention of her leaving Charlotte and relocating her business to Charleston. I glared at the Contact DB Creations link for an hour, stewing over sending a message. What would I say? The last time we saw each other, we tore each other apart. It was brutal and savage, her cutting me so deep I couldn't stop myself from lashing out until we were both broken beyond repair. Then I walked away. When I realized my mistake and went back to grovel at her feet, ready to take any form of punishment she could dish out, she was gone. I'll never forget the way her parents looked at me the day I showed up at their house. Pity, sympathy, rage, confusion, all wrapped up together. They told me she'd gone to Charlotte. She left everything, her dreams, her land, her family. More importantly, she left me. My pride was shattered, my heart broken, and the anger set in. Instead of going after her, I stayed. Then I fucked up, hurting a lot of people in the process, but was left with no choice but to take responsibility for my actions. I never tried to contact her, never apologized for the things I'd said. My life took a new turn, and I forced myself to move on. It hurt like a motherfucker, but day by day, I adjusted to a world without Darby. After all these years, who would have thought she'd return? But now I have my definitive answer, which my gut already knew. Darby Graham is back.
Chapter 2. Darby. We have the weirdest parents on the planet. The dregs of sugar at the bottom of my glass make me gag. And this is the last glass of sweet tea I drink forever. Heard both of those statements before. Evan leans back in his chair, tilting it on two legs and perching his feet on the table, in an art he perfected a long time ago. I tried it twice and both times landed ass back, embarrassed as hell, and one time with a knot on my head. Why do two people who love each other this much get divorced? It's the same question I've had since I was 25 and my parents announced they were getting a divorce. I was in Charlotte and cried for 3 weeks before my mom and dad showed up together to explain. They never really set me clear, but I had to accept it. Since then, they have continued to not only be best friends and awesome parents, but they grew suspiciously closer. Proof of that is playing out in front of me as Dad guides Mom across the living room floor, holding her close as they dance. He swears it's the best therapy for her. She agrees. They talk softly, huddling close, and he holds her injured hip delicately. Edward Graham loves my mother, and she loves him. So why aren't they still married? I have a bar in the shed. Can we make a run for it? I whisper. Lead the fucking way. His chair hits the floor hard, thudding as we stand. Ed, I think our children are trying to get away from us. Mom tosses her head our way. Let them go. I'll get you to bed safely. Dad winks at me. I race outside the back door, my brother on my heels. Once we are safely inside the shed, I scream, "Make it stop!" "Where's the booze?" is all I get out of him. Everywhere. Full liquor bar set up in the corner, and cold beer and wine are in the fridge. Where do I start? How about pouring me a glass of wine? Get what you want. I'll open the Pinot if you get this straggler off of me. I notice Runner is now full up on his hind legs, paws on Evan's chest, and begging for attention.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?